Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith and the next voice you're going to hear is a J-Talk debutante, James Taylor. How are you doing?
Hi Stuart, I'm alright, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.
My pleasure. Now, most of you, if you hear the name James Taylor, you're probably thinking of a singer, maybe a Leicestershire cricketer. That's a bit niche for most people, but you might, or you probably will know James better as Kanazawa Dreamin' on Twitter. He's our resident Tsuegen Kanazawa supporter. Before we get into your horrific defeat against Yamagata at the weekend, James, just tell us like how long you've been supporting Tsuegen and kind of how you got into it and how you find the J-League scene.
Well, I started going to watch Kanazawa in 2016. My first game actually was against Gifu, which was a 2-1 loss that season when both our teams were really bad.
You have to narrow that one down for me, I think.
I'd just come back to Japan after a year in the UK, and I was finally had free weekends and a bit more pocket money. So I didn't grow up in a football family. So I never really went to watch football in the UK when I was growing up. So I thought I'd go and see what it's like. And also I was kind of intrigued because we had Romarinho in the squad. He did not play much. And when he did not look particularly good. But it kind of piqued my interest. And it was a bit perverse, but it was fun being in a big relegation battle and surviving as well. And so, yeah, since then I go when I can, but live a little bit far away from Kanazawa now. But I think it's good. It's good. I like the J League scene. I like the English language community that we have on Twitter, and the thriving podcast scene that we have as well, which is great. Yeah, I'm very happy to be on the show and part of this this fun stuff that we're doing.
Nice. Yeah, relegation battles. They have a different kind of energy, right? It's like assuming you survive it, which Tsuegen Kanazawa do, and they have done. It's a, because I'm a veteran, and we should ask Gifu Richie his opinions as well, because he's in the same boat as me. It's very. I'm not sure it's exciting, but it's very draining, but rewarding at the same time. And each game means something until it doesn't, unfortunately. So hopefully you don't get that feeling. Yeah. Well, James, because you're on, throughout the course of this recording, we're going to talk about the weekend, the previous weekend in J2. Obviously we've got Kyoto and Jubilo at the top, but we're going to start with your mob Tsuegen. They went to the banging form Monterio Yamagata, and as the form book would have it, Monterio Yamagata turned Kanazawa over 4-1. First goal from Kota Yamada, who's on loan from I think Yokohama F Marinos, was a beauty. Like, there's really not a lot that goalkeepers can do about it. There's not a lot goalkeepers can do when defenders decide to chest the ball into their own net either. And so it was 2-0 to Yamagata just before the halfway mark in the first half. Still in the game though, James, but that first half, I mean, we spoke a little bit before we started recording that you thought that Monterio looked really good. Like, how good were they in that first half?
In the first 10 minutes, they had 4 really good chances. Mm. And fortunately, they only scored 1. But, I mean, with slightly better finishing, we could have been 4 down in 10 minutes. I appreciate you putting this one first so we can get it out of the way.
I'm nothing if not considerate.
The best part of this game was the fact that there were no drinks breaks to prolong the agony.
I saw you tweet something like that. It's because I wonder, we're coming into the Japanese summer now. Like, Do you know if that's a thing? If that's
I know Sean Carroll has a bee in his bonnet about this.
Sean Carroll has a bee in his bonnet about many things. Yeah.
I think I read or heard somewhere that it's supposed to be if the teams agree that they don't want to take a drinks break, they don't have to.
Oh, okay. No, I'd see. Yeah. Well, I wasn't aware of that.
And hopefully more teams will decide that they don't need to stop the whole match for a minute and a half to have a drink. When they all stop and have a drink when there are stoppages in play anyway.
I see this. I see what you're getting at here. The natural stoppages should provide the drinks breaks. Is that?
There's a corner, a corner or something. You'll see them sort of just step next to the goal and pick up a bottle of water or something. So why not just do that? But we were veering off into my
Stop deflecting.
Back to the game. That first quarter of an hour or first 20 minutes. Yamagata completely blew Kanazawa away. We were all over the place. Defensively, I don't know why, but the defensive concentration in Kanazawa was really off. There was one time, I think it was in the first 5 minutes, Yamagata attacked down the left, and like four defenders all turned and started running towards the ball over sort of on the edge of the area, leaving one player to come in through the D on his own. And he had a free shot, which fortunately went straight at the keeper. Mm. But that kind of set the tone. And yeah, you know it's not going to be your night when defender tries to chest it back to the goalie, gets his angle wrong and the goalie's not expecting it. Mm. He's 2 yards out and it just, didn't get much better from there, did it?
Your defense have got to stop working on their pectoral muscles because that was far too strong a chest into the back of the net. But like I said, half time it's still 2-0. But yeah, within kind of 5 or 10 minutes of the restart, Shuto Minami's face was in the right place at the right time. I think I felt sorry for the defender. I can't remember who the defender was who initially had the effort and went to claim the goal. But it did come off.
I can't remember. I didn't watch the highlights of this one because I couldn't bring myself to. Well, I watched the whole 90 minutes. That was enough.
Yes. Oh, that's all right. I'll forgive you for that. You did bring one back with about 25 minutes to go. I think Shimada... Shintaro is his name, right? Isn't it? Yeah. I think he got one back. But then... not too long after that, Kato Daiki. I don't know what you thought, but I'm actually a really big fan of Montedio's left winger, Nakahara Hikaru. He wears number 41. I think he played on the left, but in the second half he popped up on the right. So when he cuts in onto his left foot, he was brilliant with Ruaso Kumamoto last year. And I was really excited to see him step up, and he looked really good in this game. Like, one of the things I'm not used to seeing Kanazawa get kind of ploughed in the midfield, because your two central midfielders, like Ohashi and Fujimura Keita, they've been really, really good for the past kind of 2 or 3 seasons they've been together. Like, have they been different this year? Have you noticed a difference in kind of how they set up? Because it's quite odd that they get overpowered, because they're two really good players.
Mm. Yeah, they have been good for us over the last few years. I think midway through last year, Ohashi got injured.
Yes, he did.
And I think I read that it was the first kind of serious injury he'd ever had in his playing career. Mm. And since he came back from that, he's not quite been the same. He's still pretty good, but there's a few little moments where he's a bit slow to pick up a man, and we concede or something. Mm. And it's not just his fault, but those kind of things you tend to spot. Sometimes passing's a bit off. Although, in fairness, quite often the whole team's passing is sometimes a bit off. Fujimura, he's been pretty solid, I think, for the most part. But then, I mean, this late last year, I think through sort of October, November last year, we were getting smashed by pretty much everyone. November last year, we conceded three times, I think.
Mm.
I don't know. You've invited the wrong guest if you want deep tactical insights.
Where do you think the most kind of immediate improvement needs to be made in Kanazawa's lineup?
I would say up front.
Okay, so up front you started Shion Niwa and Yuji Senema. Mm.
Yeah. No, I think because last year we had Mitsuki Kato and Lukao, they got a lot of plaudits because they scored a lot of goals. They were really good.
Mm.
And obviously they're both gone because that's what happens when players at clubs like Kanazawa do well, which is fair enough. Mm. But and Niwa is a good player.
Mm.
And he's our top scorer so far this year. He's got 5. But I understand why we signed him because he's experienced and he works hard. But I just don't think he's very good. I don't want to sound rude. I don't really mean slagging off my own team's players, but I don't think it's working because we play a long ball, or an aerial ball to him, but he doesn't win many headers.
Mm.
He's very fast. And link-up play is not quite there. Well, it was there for a few weeks and then it's gone again.
Mm.
So I don't know what's going on. And he's not quite quick enough to run onto through balls or outpace the defender. Shooting's not great. So it's kind of like if you think of it compared to last year, I guess Niwa would be the replacement for Kato and Senma is the replacement for Lukao, the more physical player. But he hasn't really kind of stepped up in the way that I think, or at least I hoped he would have.
Mm.
I don't think he probably doesn't care why I hope. It's strange because we still have Kyohei Sugiura.
Yes.
Who... Mm. I guess maybe the manager thinks that Niwa and Sugiura are too similar in their style of play.
Mm.
I mean, he knows more about football than I do, I would hope. But I think it'd be worth letting him play a bit more together because last year Sugiura, he got a lot of minutes and he scored 8 goals, which is his best ever return.
Mm.
And he's really good with headers. If we put some crosses in, he scores, or he'll nearly score. Like he almost got a stoppage time equaliser against Kyoto last week, or week before. So he's good. He's good in the air, even though he's just not that tall. So I think it'd be worth trying Sugiura and Niwa, because I don't think it's really working with Senema yet. But that's my main concern.
Well, I think it's interesting you compare the forwards that you have now to last year, because just on the face of it, Shion Niwa is not as good as Mitsuki Kato, and Yuji Senema is not as good as Lukao, and so like it's interesting that you bring up Sugiura, because whenever I watched Kanazawa last year, I seem to remember him on the score sheet. Obviously, I was watching a lot of J3 last year, but whenever I did take an interest in J2, it was always Kanazawa have scored and it's Sugiura. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you would have thought that he might have been first man up to replace the goals of Kato or Lukao. But yeah, I think the same thing about Yuji Senema. He's like, I think he's the kind of player you bring on if you're a goal down with 20 minutes to go. He's not the kind of striker that I think opposing central defenders will look at and think, oh, I don't really want to play against him, because he's kind of predictable. Like, you know what's going to happen with Yuji Senema. You know the ball's going to... And now he might win headers, he might win flick-ons, he'll probably hold the ball up, but he does his damage in front of the defence. He's not going to run behind you so much. And I think that maybe, I don't know, maybe having, yeah, having players like Rodolfo, who I quite like, actually. I think he's a good player. I think having him supplying kind of more mobile strikers or strikers with like a greater range of movement would be kind of the way to get around maybe a lack of scoring threat with Senna. Just before we move on, what do you think about Yanagishita? I hate saying that name. It's really difficult for me. Masaki Yanagishita. I can never say it again. Jeez. Your manager.
You can edit.
I can edit. Yes. like, what do you think about him? He's been in charge a while at Kanazawa.
I think this is just, fifth year.
Yep. What's the feeling like for you or the support? Is it something that like you don't want to see him get sacked? You'd rather him continue, or you'd rather him choose his own time for leaving because he's done such a good job? Like, what's the prevailing thought?
I like him. I think he's been really good for Kanazawa. When he took over after we survived through the promotion relegation playoff.
Oh, back in those days,
so he took over start of 2017. And each year, up to last year, each year gradually improved the league position and also the general performances. The first year he was there, we were a lot of games where we were losing 4 or 5 nil. And then his second year, we were getting those down to sort of 1-goal losses. And then the third year, we were turning those into draws or 1-goal wins. And yeah, last year was it was just crazy generally. So this year, I guess it's kind of hard to build on last year because last year was just a mess for everyone. But I think I can see why people might be getting frustrated. I guess some people might, because he's got his system and he's got his favourites and he sticks to them. We're always a 4-4-2. Not many changes to the starting 11. And also that players seem to go missing for a while. Like last year, Toa Yamane was missing for 3 months. And it turned out it was just because he wasn't putting the effort in training or something. Because Yanagishita, I can't say it now, I'm catching it off you.
Sorry.
Manager.
The gaffer.
Manager's really big on the team, doing stuff for the team. So like last year, players like Shimazu and Kubota, they came through and they were really good. Shimazu, I think, had 9 goals. And most of them, belters. Had hardly been seen this year. Kubota's hardly been seen this year. We don't know why. I don't know if they're injured or if they're just falling out of favour or what.
It's always a mystery that with J-League clubs. Like, you never really quite sure if they've got injuries, or the only way you know if a player's got injuries is if someone actually goes to the training ground and watches training and sees them in a wheelchair or like strapped up on the side. It's really weird I should be used to it now, but it's still one thing that really kind of like really annoys me, that we don't have a complete picture of like if there is an injury or if a player has just fallen out of favor. That's kind of, it's an odd situation to be in.
I get why they do it. I guess maybe, you know, telling the public that someone's got a health problem can be seen as, I guess, like invading on their privacy to some extent. And also gives the opposition a hint about, oh, we don't need to worry because this player's not playing. So it's always that thing, this player might come back. But yeah, it's frustrating. You don't know what's going on. But with regards to Yanagishita, I almost got it right there. You're throwing me off now.
There's a lot of syllables in that name. There's too many syllables.
I'm happy for him to stay. I like the way that he brings on youth players. And I know a lot of his previous coaching experience has been with youth sides or at senior sides where he's brought in a lot of youth players. Last year, that was through necessity with Kanagawa because of the schedule. But even this year as well, you look at the bench for every match and there's at least two sort of university graduates have just signed this year. And he's given lots of game time to the likes of Ohtani, who just signed from Toyama, still quite young. And actually, I think I'm getting to the age now where everyone's young. it won't be long before I'll be older than all the players in the squad, and that's when my midlife crisis will start. But it's weird to think. I think we have quite a. I think the average age of the squad is, if not the youngest, maybe the second youngest in the league.
Mm.
Last year it's the youngest. So I like that. I like what he does. He's done good stuff for Kanazawa. He's been really good, and I'd be happy for him to stay as long as he wants. Mm. I don't mind if we turn it to like Mito, the kind of the epitome of mid-tableness.
Mm.
I'd be happy with that. Just trying to improve every year. That works for me.
I think that's
not very ambitious, but
I completely agree, and I think that some of the best things that J2 clubs can do, and especially like provincial clubs like Kanazawa, like Mito, like Gifu to a certain extent, is that they can become places where players can think, oh, well, if I go there, I'll play. And if I play, there's a chance that I'll get better. And I think that what Mito have done, especially Mito over the last couple of years, I think they're a little bit geographically more fortunate because they can attract, obviously, Kashima players, but they can also attract Tokyo-based players as well. Mm. But, like, I think teams that don't have the biggest budget and that don't necessarily have the star pull, if they can get known for developing players, then that's going to make their kind of talent acquisition or the way that they kind of can scout university graduates or high school graduates even, it makes their job so much easier. And if you've got a manager that's on board, if you've got a manager that kind of knows that he could bring in a cast of 30-year-olds who will stay for a season, but in the long run, it's much more beneficial, even if the growing pains are there. It's much more beneficial in the long run to establish yourself as a club where, young players can come and get better, because that's where you get you get J1 clubs looking at places to send their young players. And that's why, like last year, Kota Yamada, he was at Mito on loan from Yokohama F. Marinos, and now he's made the step up to Monterrey Yamagata, but he's got that grounding, you know, and he's been there. And I think it's true for a lot of players. I think like Mutsuki Kato for Tsuyoki Kanazawa. I mean, it wouldn't be a J-Talk Extra Time if I didn't mention Kyogo Furuhashi, of course, coming to Gifu. There we go. Got that, slipped that one in seamlessly. But yeah, I think it's when you have a manager that's on board, I think it's just kind of, it helps. And I think also like being realistic about what the club is and what the club can be. Like it's... Mm. Like you mentioned earlier where like Kato left after one season, I immediately thought of Giravants Kitakyushu, who they had one good season and they got completely gutted. Mm. Like all their best players left. Yeah. But then I think that's the kind of situation where they have brought in some other good players too. Obviously not as good, but like you get known as a club and you get known as a manager like Shinji Kobayashi does, that you become a club where players will want to go even if it doesn't seem very fashionable, which Kitakyushu, Kanazawa, Mito, like I'm trying to think of other examples, maybe Imabari possibly. Tokushima used to be like that before Rodriguez took over, but that kind of stuff. Mm.
Yeah.
I think it was probably time to move on from from Kanaza. But yeah, I think hopefully you'll be all right. You know, a bit of positivity. Yeah. You'll be all right. James, let's move to the top of the table then. So while I check my league table standings, I do notice that we have a three-point gap at the top. Kyoto Sanga, I should say top two, because Kyoto Sanga are currently top. They've got 44 points, and so have Jubilo Iwata. So both those teams won at the weekend. Jubilo won 1-0 away at Viva in Nagasaki. From the highlights that I saw, it looked deserved. Like, it could have been more, but they had to wait for substitute Koki Ogawa to come on and score the winner. Very nice nice through ball from Yuto Suzuki and Ogawa, who's got potential, but he's been outshone by Lukian this year, I think, who's got 10 goals. So they won 1-0 at Nagasaki, and Kyoto Sanga won 2-0 at home against Fajiano Okayama. I think the goalkeeper Togo Umeda will he'll want to forget the first goal for Kyoto. He came rushing out probably, what would you say, 35-40 yards out.
Yeah, that's something like that, 35 yards.
Miskicked, and if there's one player you don't really want to miskick in front of, it's Peter Utaka, who had the relatively simple job of slotting into an empty net in the first half. In the second half, it was 2-0. Utaka again involved. It goes without saying he's playing really well, but I think one of the stars of Sanga's season so far is their midfielder, Kawasaki Sota. He's a really, really good player at the base of their midfield. And he kept his cool in front of goal, put Kyoto 2-0 up. And yeah, from there, they saw it out. James, we've got Kyoto and Jubilo at the top. Jubilo's is quite a good win, because Nagasaki are no mugs under their new manager. And it looked, from the highlights that I saw, not a dominant display, but a relatively hassle-free kind of day, which not many teams will go to Nagasaki and have a hassle-free day, I don't think.
Yeah, I watched the Nagasaki Iwata game in full, and yeah, Nagasaki, they've been on a good run, but Iwata have been on a better run, haven't they? So I was surprised at how, I guess, kind of passive Nagasaki seemed in this one. They were inviting a lot of pressure through kind of misplaced passes out of defence or in midfield, which it's obviously not a good idea, especially against the team that is now 10 games unbeaten. Iwata, they're doing really well, aren't they? We didn't really expect it, did you? I remember the pre-season pods.
You
can edit this bit as well, don't worry.
Jesus.
I mean, no, I was the same. I didn't think they were going to be anything special. It was like last year, they were just kind of nothingy, weren't they? But they suddenly kicked into gear now. Mm. And so, yeah, they're doing really well, aren't they? And they hit the bar so many times. I think it was, might have been twice in the end, but pretty still shaking.
I think that for me, it was always a question of their manager. Like, there's no doubt that they've got a lot of good players. Like, they're going to lose one of their defenders, I think, Ito Hiroki. I think he's moving to Stuttgart in maybe their reserve side in the Bundesliga or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see how they cope when he leaves, because this is a defence that hasn't conceded a goal in the last 7 games, I don't think. Yeah, it was always a question of their manager for me. Masakazu Sugi didn't do a very good job at Niigata last time out, and the only reason he got the Jubilo job is because he used to play for them. I mean, said that, you can't argue with the results, and they're playing. I don't know if they're playing well. Well, they obviously are playing well, but they're not playing the kind of romantic football that we might expect a quote unquote big name like Jubilo Iwata to play in J2. But I think it'll take a good side to dislodge one of these two. Because I think Kyoto are not that surprising. Like, they're well-drilled. They know exactly what they're doing. They're strong physically, but they're also quite clinical as well. They don't concede many goals either. Tomoyo Wakahara, who their goalkeeper, who's taken like quite a long time to establish himself, because he was a goalkeeper with potential. He's actually playing really well now. And yeah, I think these two teams, I mean, when you've got a sharp edge like Utaka and Lukian for Jubilo, Utaka for Sanga, obviously, like, you only need to be relatively okay at the back. And both of them are more than relatively okay at the back, and they're doing really well. And it wouldn't surprise me if these two were the top two come to the end of the year, but we're a long way to go just yet. So we'll look at the teams just behind them. So Niigata drew 0-0 with Mito in a game that never had 0-0 draw on it. Especially if you ask Johnny Nickel. I don't want to drop that one in just down there. But yeah, no one thought this would finish 0-0, but finished 0-0. It did. One game that didn't finish 0-0 was FC Ryukyu's drubbing of... I'm trying to think of the correct adjective here. I'm going to use pathetic Matsumoto Yamaga, because they were completely abject. I know they've just got a new manager, Hiroshi Nanami, who's taking his time to kind of assess what he's got there. But Ryukyu were good. And Koki Kiyotake, he's having a great season. And his I think it was his third goal, his hat-trick goal, where he just smashed it in from 25 yards. Outstanding. Ryukyu, they're a good side. I mean, that's obvious because they're in fourth position. But I think a few people were expecting them to fall away. But they've got a decent goal threat. But they've scored more goals than in the top two, and I think they'll hang around as long as they've got a fit Kiyotake, a fit Koya Kazama, who's playing really well. Who's their main forward? I've completely blanked their main forward's name. It'll come to me. Takuma Abe, that's it. Yes. As long as they keep all those relatively fit and healthy, I think they'll do well. In fifth place, Machida Zelvia. God, we scored a lot of goals this weekend, didn't we? Jeez. Machida Zelvia hit 5, if I'm not mistaken, against Ehime. I think the thing that I remember, the two things I remember from this game are Kaine Yoshio. He's on loan from Yokohama F. Marinos as well, I believe. He scored a hat-trick. And Yota Akimoto, the Ehime goalkeeper, he was getting increasingly angry with each goal that that went past him until he was positively seething at the end. 5-0 for Machida, but 5 goals. We can all score 5 goals. What we can't all do is score 6 goals, and that's what Vanfori Corfu did against a hapless Gunma. They won 6-2. I wouldn't exactly call this an 8-goal thriller, because that would do... that would be a slight injustice to the actual excitement of this game, because Corfu were, I think they were 4-0 up halfway through, maybe just after half an hour or so. They're very impressive. Izumizawa Jin was at the heart of most things good that Corfu were doing, but also Gakuto Notsuda, who's playing really well for them as well. And they're back in their rightful position of... Are they in 5th or 6th? They must be in 6th.
The table has them 6th. Equal 5th.
Equal 5th. I see. That's just beautiful. That's where they deserve to be. They deserve to be in 5th, because that's where they always are. James, out of those 4 teams, though, Niigata, Ryukyu, Zelvia, and Corfu, I should mention that Zelvia signed Takuya Yasui from... Vissel Kobe, who's a really good midfielder who should be able to slot nicely into that lineup. Out of those 4 teams, which one of them has really caught your eye this year, or have any of them?
Ryukyu, because they're really fun to watch. They score a lot of goals, which is what I like to watch, teams that score goals. Someone said I'd squad them against my team. They're playing really well, as you said. They started really well. Is it 2019? They had a really good start to the season, didn't they?
They did,
But then
yeah.
they fell away, and for a while, people were wondering if they were going to plummet all the way down into the relegation battle. So it's good to see that now we're basically halfway through the season and they're still up there. They haven't fallen away yet, and soon everyone's going to have a nice long break. So hopefully, they'll be able to come back refreshed and keep going again, because I'd love to see them stay up in the promotion race for the whole season. That'd be fantastic, especially as a one of the smaller clubs. It's great. And this, I mean, I'm surprised that Mats Modd are as high in the table as they are at 17th.
Where are they? 17th. They were abysmal. They were
Because
horrific. Yeah.
I only watched the highlights of this, but it was like Ryukyu on it was like it was on FIFA and they put it on absolute beginner level where every shot you take goes in. And
Defenders just pass it to the attackers as well, right?
yeah, they try passing to each other and then one of them like scuffs it to your striker who strolls in and scores. They scored really good goals. The fourth goal, like you said, was really good. I liked the third goal where he kind of waited for the, I think it was for the goalie to commit himself, sort of knocked it around him
Yes,
and
yes,
hit
yes,
it to
yes.
a crowd. That was a nice one. But I mean,
It's my
Mats
boy,
Modd
Kolya
make it
Kuzawa.
easy, really easy for them. And like John said before, he said it wasn't going to be pretty. And he was right. Matsumoto is certainly not pretty.
Yeah, I think Aussie would say it was very pretty indeed. And I think
Yeah.
we spoke a little bit about this before we hit record. It's a bad year to have a bad year,
Yeah.
and Matsumoto Yamaga are having a bad year, and they need some reinforcements, and because they look pretty abject, and they have looked pretty abject at certain points this year. The defense has been woeful, and that's not usually been a problem for Matsumoto Yamaga. They've usually had, obviously through the Sorimachi phase, they had a relatively stable kind of defense and goalkeeper. Obviously, last year was a bit weird. They kind of switched it around a bit, but they've been bad this year. And if they, I don't know if they think Nanami is the guy to shore up a defense, I think they might have a rude awakening if they haven't already. They already had one. I think. So we've obviously spoken about Yamagata as well, but out of those, so we'll take it all the way down to Tokyo Verdy, who 5 wins on the spin. I think they won. Who did they beat? They beat Mito, did they not? I think so. Yeah.
Tochigi.
Oh, Tochigi. Sorry. Yes. So they've won 5 in a row after being pretty poor in the first half of this season. Out of the teams from 9th to 3rd, if you had to choose one who you think might gate crash the promotion spots, if I had to put you on the spot, you see, this is what happens on J Talk Extra Time. We
Yeah.
don't sit on the fence. We draw lines and we say which team's going to finish above that line. If you were going to pick one of these teams, who would you pick?
I think Yamagata.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think they're on the up.
Mm.
And I think the Corfu are always going to be fifth.
Yes, they are.
Niigata kind of fallen away a little bit in recent weeks, although there's nothing to say they can't come back. Ryukyu, I think, will stay up there, but I don't think they'll get back up. But yeah, I think Yamagata, the way they've been playing since Klimovsky took over, has been really, really good. And having seen firsthand, well, secondhand, I suppose, how well they played at the weekend, I wouldn't be surprised if they thrash a few more teams this year and put themselves right up in the hunt for a J1 spot. They were really good.
I Yes,
I can sense
that they were really good. Well, let's move down to teams that are not really good. This is more my territory. I'm comfortable down here. This is where I make my living. So down at the bottom of the table, we do have ourselves a bit of a battle royale for these, not for these four relegation spots, to get out of these four relegation spots, I should say. The big winners this weekend were Omiya Ardija, who picked up their first win under new manager Masahiro Shimoda. And wouldn't you know it, it came against his former Japanese club. I think it was Omiya's first win in 13 or 14, I seem to remember the commentator saying. But yeah, it was a well-drilled win. It wasn't pretty, but Atsushi Kurokawa's goal, I think it was maybe 75th minute, 15 minutes from the end, give or take, I gave Omiya a very, very precious win, I think, and a clean sheet as well, which will do them, again, it will do them the world of good. So they were the big winners this weekend. And Sagami Hara picked up a very, I think, creditable point away at fellow J3 promotees last year, Blaublitz Akita, Ryoto? Is that, am I reading that kanji right? Yeah, I should have chosen the English version, really. Ryoto, yes, I just checked the English version. Okay, Ryoto Kodama equalizing Saito Keita's first half goal for Akita. I think Sagami Hara will need to pick up wins instead of draws, but this was a very creditable draw. Actually, we've already spoken about Gunma and Ehime's goal difference getting a bit of a battering. And Giravansky to Kyushu, they drew 0-0 at home against Jeff United Chiba. Jeff seemed to have an away kit that looks like a goalkeeper kit for some reason. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not interested in that kind of tomfoolery. But Giravansky to Kyushu picking up a point which takes them out of the relegation zone on goal difference by one goal, if I'm reading that correctly. Yes. Looking at the bottom of the table, James, like, there are certain teams that we think or we thought would be down there. I believe that Ehime, Sagami Hara would be down there. Gunma, I was a bit on the line about. No one pegged Omiya being down there. I was worried about Giravance with their exodus of talent. What do you make of the relegation battle at the moment? Do you sense it's kind of all four spots are up for grabs, or do you feel certain teams might not make it out of the relegation spots?
I can't see Sagami Hara getting out of there. I think the fact that Omiya didn't win for 3 months and still weren't bottom tells you quite a lot about Sagami Hara.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, they try hard and everything, and they, I guess, like, I think you've said it before, it's been said before on the pod, but that they seemed like they kind of was really steady through J3, and they kind of just snuck in when all the other contenders would no, you have it, kind of try not to get promoted. But then they seem like they're just going to try and do exactly the same thing in J2, which it's not going to work the same way it didn't work for Matsumoto when they went up to J1. They just didn't do anything. So I can't see them getting out of it. The others, though, I mean, I think anyone, we talked before we started recording, anyone from sort of 10th downwards could easily get sucked into this, because it is really tight. And yeah, a few bad results and you can be staring into the abyss. A few good results and you'll be thinking, oh yeah, J1, here we come. So
I think, like, you know, when we were talking before, like, I made a joke a little bit about Gunma players running into the net to get the ball when they were like five. But when you look at this table, like goal difference is going to, it could well come into play. And that's why these kind of hammerings, because Ehime conceded their fifth goal in the 94th minute or so. And these kind of things, they might be crucial come the season then. So as fun as it is to laugh at a team getting turned over 6-2, those two goals, they could be worth a lot come the end of the season if it comes out down to goal difference, in which, given that there are so many teams in the relegation battle and there are four spots available, it could well come down to goal difference. So yeah, maybe every goal counts. So when you do get a hiding, or when you are losing 3-0, teams will have to make a decision. Do we want to, if it's 3-0 with 10 minutes to play, do you go and try and hold that goal difference and not get hammered? Or do you think, right, if we get a goal here, it's actually, you know, it could actually be worth our while to do that? And I think as the season gets into the second third and the final third, I think things like that, the approach of teams, will be kind of interesting to figure out. Which team haven't we? I think we spoke about all teams, right? Wow, imagine.
We mentioned all the matches, I think. But
I think we mentioned all the matches. Yeah, I don't want to talk about Jeff United. I mean, John can talk about that.
I've got a theory about Jeff. Do you want to hear my theory about Jeff?
Whoa. You got a theory about Jeff?
I watched the highlights of this game.
Right.
And it seemed like for the first sort of 70 minutes, it was all Jeff.
It was.
In really nice passing moves, but there's no end product. Flattering to deceive, as usual. And then in the last 10 minutes or so, they almost lost it a few times. Are you familiar with the show Peep Show?
I am familiar with the show Peep Show, right. Yes.
So my theory is that the character Jeff was named after Jeff United. In the way that he's a dick. But occasionally he does things and you think, oh, maybe he's okay. Or the character Mark thinks, oh, maybe Jeff's okay. Maybe we can be friends. And then it turns out it was a horrible trick. And he really is that nasty. I think Jeff United are the inspiration for the character Jeff from Peep Show.
Interesting.
That's this week's crazy J2 theory.
I like that. We've gone deep. I like that. We've transcended the culture. I do like that. Yeah.
I think I have too much thinking time to do late night ramblings of a.
Honestly, the amount of stuff that we've spoken about Jeff United, with like curses in the corners, mm-hmm. and like players laughing after they've been beaten 5-0 at home. Nothing is too far-fetched when it comes to Jeff United, I think.
And all of their kits are always terrible.
I don't agree with that.
The Dayglow ones, why are you wearing high vis? Don't work on a construction site. Stop. You don't need high vis shirts. Just wear yellow, normal yellow.
I don't mind the day glow stuff. I don't like the full like shirt, shorts and socks as day glow. But I'm,
and that weird wolf thing that was on their shirts last year. What was that about?
Yeah, because it's the dog, isn't it? It's the dog. It's the dog or the wolf on their badge. I mean,
yeah, but it doesn't need to be like that big thing on their lower stomach.
That is true.
Just keep the badge. Let's move on.
You're spoiled with Swagen's kits. Yeah, you're spoiled with them. They're good. All right. Okay. Right. Let's look at the weekend and what's coming up. Where are you? Check you out hosting FC Ryukyu this weekend. That'll be fun, won't it? I do believe. Yeah.
Watching that with great trepidation.
I think that'll be, at the risk of sounding very Johnny Nicol, I don't think it will finish 0-0. Put your money, so my apologies. It might be a good thing. So Kanazawa versus Ryukyu, that would be a good game, actually. we've got a bit of a clash at the bottom because Sagami Hara are hosting Kitakyushu. At the top, well, Iwata Niigata and Kyoto Nagasaki. Now, both those games, you'd think, if the home team wins, so Kyoto are hosting Nagasaki and Jubilo are hosting Niigata, especially if Jubilo win, they'll put some kind of distance between themselves and Niigata, depending on how other results go. So that those two games at the top could be important. What other games am I looking at? Omiya versus Yamagata as well. I think that'll be an interesting one because, like you've said, Montedio Yamagata playing really well at the moment, and there are just small signs of shoots of recovery from Omiya. I think if Omiya don't lose, I think that would be a good result for them because I would put Yamagata as favourites in that game. Just because of the run that they're coming on. What do you think, James? What, obviously, you'll be focused on Kanazawa and Ryukyu, but like that game or other games, which ones take your fancy?
Well, same as you, yeah. The Kyoto Nagasaki and Iwata Niigata are the ones that jumped out because they, you know, kind of top of the table clashes. It could break sort of make a gap to the chasing pack. Apart from that, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. We didn't really talk about Akita, I don't think, and I think it'll be interesting to see. Ehime against Akita. This might be a game that both teams will look at and think we can win this, because. Obviously, Akita will look at it. I think we can win this because Ehime are 19th. And they've been pretty inconsistent. They won a couple of weeks ago, didn't they? But they've not done too well recently. But they changed their manager and, you know, maybe things will start to improve. Whereas I think Ehime will look at Akita and think, yeah, it's clear what their system is. Mm. We know how they're going to play. They don't have their own pitch to help them because this is in Ehime. So if they can come up with a plan to get past Akita, then they'll think we can take something from this. I think that might be interesting. I was saying to you before we started recording, I really like Akita this year. I think they're a really good example of a team that knows its strengths and weaknesses and plays in a way that will minimize those weaknesses and maximize the strength, and also the players actually follow the instructions, and that's why it's working for them.
You said that quite wistfully that they follow instructions.
I think the way Akita are playing this year is a good model for J3 promotees and also for certain other mid-table J2 teams. This is a good way to approach things. It's not spectacular, but not everyone can be, you know, there's kind of carefree, swashbuckling, attacking teams. You've got to play with what you've got and play the way that works for you. So, yeah, I think Akita away to Ehime might be interesting. And apart from that, well, maybe Tochigi Machida, because I had this image of Tochigi as being quite tight defensively. And although perhaps the statistics don't bear that out, and they're on a bit of a bad run, whereas Machida are on a good run, kind of. They're scoring a lot. They're up in fifth, doing all right. Interesting to see if they can keep that going.
I think that Machida are a bit of a wild card. Like, because I know when I watched their game, excuse me, at the weekend, I mean, they brought on Chong Tae-sei for the last, I don't know, however many minutes it was. And I think he thundered one off the crossbar just before the end as well. I mean, they do have an array of attacking talent. I mean, I don't know how, like, Yuki Nakashima or Hasegawa still still playing that system, but they've got Dudu, they've got Chonte-Said, and obviously they've got they've got Yoshio to call upon, but the main guy is Taiki Hirata, who is just who's still one of the best players in this league. It's interesting that the image of Tochigi is one of like being really solid defensively. I think this year they're kind of middle of the road. Like last year they were really, really good. They didn't concede many goals at all. I think they're just probably bang about league average, I would say. Obviously they lost Masaya Tashiro, their central defensive rock last year. He went to Sagan Tosu and they're having a bit of a good season in defense in J1. The image, if you'd have said before the start of this year, I'd have said there probably wasn't going to be much between these sides, Tochigi and Machida, but there is at the moment. And like I said, they've just signed Takuya Yasui. I think Takuya is his name. Takuya Yasui from Vissel Kobe, who, I mean, there's no there's no shame in not getting into that particular Vissel Kobe midfield at this particular time. And I think that he's a good player, and I think they'll see it's just another good player to slot in. And I don't think I don't think they'll trouble the promotion spots, but they're not going to be there'll be nobody's mugs. Like there'll be a difficult out, and they'll prove tricky, and they'll have these kind of peak weeks where everything goes for them and they'll look irresistible, but they'll also have these kind of weeks where it wouldn't surprise me if they lost at like Matsumoto or something like that, something along those lines. But yeah, I think your point about Akita is well made, and I think that like you said, it's just a case of like a team and a club cutting its cloth accordingly, right? Like they're not a team full of superstars, and with all due respect to Akita, they probably never will be, and they probably can't be, just because of where they are and who they are. But they have a manager who kind of understands that, and I think that he's a greatly respected manager. Ken Yoshida, he did a great job at Numazu before he went to Akita, and yeah, I'm with you. I hope they comfortably stay up. Actually, I don't really want to see them get dragged down into relegation. I was going to call it a festival then, but that's the wrong terminology. Yeah, but I don't want to see them dragged down into the relegation zone, because, like, I think they're a club that they should cut their grass a bit more often. If I'm being super picky about them, but they know exactly who they are and how they should play, and I think that's to be applauded in this particular league. James, I think that was a solid debut. We'll definitely have you back on if you can manage to spare some time. Hopefully I'll tell you what, next time I'll ask you on after a win. How does that sound? Instead of a defeat.
Sounds good, but yeah. Hopefully it won't be a case of like me going missing for 3 months like the way I'm in here.
No. Hopefully it won't be too long. But yeah, James, thank you ever so much for taking the time. You're a busy guy, and like I said, after a Kanazawa win, we'll have you back on, all right?
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. Okay, so big thanks to James Taylor there, Kanazawa Dreaming. I'm sure you already follow him on Twitter. If not, do it. You won't be disappointed. And yeah, please enjoy the J2 football this weekend, but stay tuned. Master Mike Innes is on the decks for his J3 roundup, and Gifu are top of the league, by the way, before he gets into that. But yeah, stay tuned, but stay well, enjoy the football, and I'll speak to you again soon. But stay tuned for the short corner. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on the weekend league games in round 13, previewing fixtures coming up in round 14, and also answering some listener questions. Straight into the action this week, and there were five round 13 games on Saturday, all of them pitching higher-ranked teams against sides lower down the table, but only Roasso Kumamoto and surprise package Fukushima United were able to claim maximum points. Kumamoto travelled to Kamatamari Seneki and had the perfect opportunity to get off to a good start when Seneki midfielder Kazuki Iwamoto was adjudged to have handled in the penalty area. Roasso striker Toshiki Takahashi stepped up to take the spot kick, but his namesake and Kamatamari keeper Takuya Takahashi dived low to his left and saved brilliantly. In the 29th minute, however, Roasso Takahashi made amends when he took advantage of some sluggish home defending to head home unchallenged Wataru Iwashita's cross. Kumamoto seemed to be in charge for the first half, but their good work was undone seconds after the restart as Seneki's Atsushi Satsukawa raced down the wing and delivered a perfect cross onto the forehead of Mark Ajay Kurita, whose powerful header had too much on it for Yuya Sato in the Kumamoto goal. With 8 minutes remaining, though, Toshiki Takahashi grabbed the winner with his second of the game, another header, in fact. This time, a neat glance to deflect Naohiro Sugiyama's cross past the wrong-footed keeper. Kumamoto 2, Sanuki 1. At Gainari Tottori, Fukushima spent most of the game on the front foot, but the clearest opportunities came after Tokachi had come on as a substitute early in the second half. In the 63rd minute, he latched on to a knockdown by Ismaila and, from 20 yards, sent a half-volley narrowly wide. 2 minutes later, after his initial shot was parried by Tottori keeper Ken Tajiri, Tokachi regained possession on the edge of the area and sent a perfect curling shot into the top corner. What a way to score his first goal of an injury-hit season. Fukushima may have created more chances, but they still owed a vote of thanks to goalkeeper Kaito Yamamoto, who made a point-blank save in stoppage time to preserve their lead. A sweet Tottori passing move set up substitute Koki Harada 6 yards out, but Yamamoto was alert to the danger and blocked the shot. Final score, Tottori 0, Fukushima 1. Away victories then for Kumamoto and Fukushima. It seemed rather harder work for Kumamoto, whose form remains up and down even if they now find themselves in the promotion places, while Fukushima have 6 wins in the last 7. I'll talk more about Fukushima in the Q&A section later in this episode. There was a draw for previous leaders Katare Toyama, who had a tough game at home to improving FC Imabari. The visitors survived early Toyama pressure to go in front 9 minutes before half-time when Wataru Harada sneaked cleverly round the back to head in a Takuro Uehara free kick when the defenders' attention was on Valdemar and Oscar Linton. Early in the second half, a brilliant save from a Yohei Ono header by Tomohito Shugyo meant Imabari kept their lead, and shortly afterwards Jun Arima, outstanding in last week's win over Gifu, missed a great chance to make it 2-0 as he shot just off target. 15 minutes from time, though, Toyama snatched the equaliser through veteran substitute Yusuke Tanaka, a name that will be familiar to fans of Fukuoka, Chiba and Corfu. Tanaka converted a lovely cross by Shaw Hanai, a dangerous player when, as in this case, he has space to operate around the penalty area. Final score 1-1 and a fair result in a close match. Katare are still challenging at the top and at least were well-dressed in their stylish dark blue summer kits. Imabari continue to get better under Keiichiro Nuno and now are unbeaten in 4. To round off the Saturday fixtures with defeats for 2 more of the front-running teams. Iwate Gurugia Morioka against YSCC Yokohama pitched Iwate's increasingly potent attack against the leaky defence of YSCC, who seemed to have lost to injury goalkeeper Ryosuke Sagawa so impressive early in the season. Sagawa's replacement is former Akita reserve Daiki Koike, and J3 being what it is, against Iwate, Koike enjoyed an afternoon of quiet relaxation as his goal was rarely troubled despite the presence of Brenner, Morilato, Yuki Shikama and co. At the other end, YSCC went one up through a 72nd minute free kick by Atsushi Kikutani, and they confirmed the win 5 minutes from time, Jorn Pedersen slotting in a composed finish to a slick counter-attack. Very disappointing for Iwate and their promotion hopes, but a fourth win in five league outings for Yuki Stouff's team. The last of those wins was against Fujieda My FC, whose coach Yasuharu Kurata made five changes to the starting lineup for their game at home to Tegevajaro Miyazaki. Meanwhile, for Tegevajaro, forward Kaito Umeda was missing from the squad for the first time this season. Miyazaki's good results seem to have come about not so much due to intensity and energy, more individual skill or successful combinations. And those aspects look to be working less successfully now, which means it's harder to cope with occasions when the defence isn't on point, such as in the 20th minute against Fujieda, when Junya Kurose was left to mark two forwards seeking to get on the end of a cross from Masahiko Sugita. Ryosuke Hisadomi it was who met the incoming ball and steered it past an exposed Shunsuke Ueda in the Miyazaki goal. During the rest of the first half, Fujieda kept Tegevajaro at bay, and soon after the restart, it was 2-0. Hisadomi getting in a header from a corner, Keigo Hashimoto scrambling it off the line, but Yuki Oshitani firing in the rebound for his second of the season. Hashimoto did then bundle one in for Miyazaki after Yudai Tokunaga's shot was blocked, but chasing the game, injecting urgency and pace into their play is not something this Tegevajaro team are necessarily set up to do, and it ended Fujieda 2, Miyazaki 1. On to Sunday, when both games may have ended 1-0, but there was late drama between FC Gifu and Kagoshima United, and between Azul Claro Numazu and AC Nagano Parseiro. For Gifu, Yosuke Kashiwagi was absent after going off in the opening minutes of last week's game, and Takeyoshi Anma gave Hirofumi Yamauchi his first league start for the club. In the first half, Yamauchi headed well wide from a corner, and for Kagoshima, Rei Yonezawa was the danger man, first carving out a chance that had Gifu keeper Kazushige Kirihata scrambling to tip the ball round the post, and then, from the resulting corner, reacting quickly to control the loose ball and sending a half-volley fizzing just off target. Early in the second half, Shota Kawanish put Yamauchi through on goal, but his weak shot was comfortably saved by Shogo Onishi. The breakthrough finally came 3 minutes from time when Kagoshima substitute Gustavo lost possession 20 yards inside the Gifu half, from where the ball was played up to Bright Machida, who skipped away from the defender and threaded it to Kawanish. The division's most dangerous striker took an angled first-time shot which flew across Onishi and inside the far post. Jubilant scenes at Naganagawa for a ground-out victory. And there were wild celebrations involving players and supporters of Nagano, who netted in injury time to win a third straight game, this time at Numazu. In all honesty, it looked poor quality fare, heading for a tame goalless draw until the 88th minute when Numazu midfielder Kazuki Somaya went down as if he'd been shot following a challenge by Takuma Mizutani, who was himself promptly sized down by Tatsuya Anzai. Somaya, who for a brief moment conveyed the impression of having been seriously injured, sprang to his feet to remonstrate with the referee. Indeed, Somaya had to be held back by players of both teams as he yelled in the face of Yoshimi Yamashita and then shoved Nagano's Yuzuru Yoshimura in the chest, Not surprisingly, Yamashita yellow-carded both Somaya and Anzai, and the atmosphere surrounding the game felt charged in a way perhaps unfamiliar in J3. Then, in injury time, Masaki Miyasaka floated a ball into the Numazu box and Nagano captain Kenta Hirose found space to head home, only for the goal to be immediately ruled out for offside. Further inflamed, Paseiro pressed forward once more, and in the fourth of three additional minutes, a hopeful long ball into the area was met by Yuzuru Yoshimura, who guided it past Masataka Nomura and in. This time it counted, and Yoshimura and his teammates hurdled the advertising hoardings, charged across the running track to celebrate with their orange-clad, percussion instrument-bearing supporters. The troubled times of the early part of Paseiro's season seemed to be moving into the realms of memory. In their different ways, these were big wins indeed for both Gifu and Nagano. The team with a bye this week were Vanrare Hachinohe. So what do these results mean for the current league standings? It's important to note that there are now only two rounds to go until the midpoint of the season, and this means only two teams have played every round, or, to put it another way, have yet to have a bye. These teams are, as it happens, placed first and second in the J3 table. Gifu have 25 points from 13 games, Kumamoto 23 from 13. Then Fukushima have 23, Toyama 22, Iwate 21, and Miyazaki 20, all from 12 games. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Imabari with 11 points, Numazu with 10, Sanuki with 9, and Tottori 8. There were questions from a couple of listeners this week, and I'll start with Tobias at Condry, asking about the sudden rise of Fukushima United within the league. In basic terms, I think in part the team have improved, and in part the standard of the division overall is lower. Fukushima's defence is much better. In 12 games this season, they've conceded 11 goals. In the first 12 games of last season, they conceded 20. Yu Tokisaki has the defensive part of the team organised in a similar way to last season, but the new players have had a lot of impact. Kaito Yamamoto from Kumamoto in goal, who John talked about pre-season. Shoma Kamata has played on the left and right-hand side of the back three. He joined towards the end of the transfer window, having been released by Akita. They've both brought experience, but a couple of rookies also have done well. Kosuke Tanaka on the left and Kazuki Dohana in the middle. The net effect of this strengthening is that Fukushima don't concede too many silly goals, especially to teams lower down the table. I'm not saying they never concede silly goals. For example, the first against Kumamoto in round 5, but not too many, which in J3 is a big plus. Also, there's been a flattening out of the overall quality of the division, which means it's easier for an OK team to rise closer to the top. Partly this is because the two best teams from 2020 have been promoted and not replaced, but partly there aren't any teams so far to have emerged from the pack as demonstrably superior. What the division has is half a dozen teams who are pretty comparable in standard. They win more than they lose, but they also drop points and lose games they objectively shouldn't. Fukushima have got themselves into this group. To finish on Fukushima, I'll observe that they've actually scored one goal fewer this year than they had after 12 games in 2020, 15 compared to 16. I wonder if the availability of Tokach, alongside players in attacking midfield roles like Hiroshi Yoshinaga and Hiroki Higuchi, may provide more routes to goal, rather than relying on the dangerous but erratic Ismaila. Tobias and Johnny Nickel at Blog Gamba both asked a question on a similar topic, which I'll summarise as looking at the causes of Gainare Tottori's troubles. So to describe what those troubles are, They finished last season in fifth place, kept on the coach, Riki Takagi, won the first match of this season dramatically at Kagoshima, then didn't win again until round six, 1-0 at home to Senuki, who'd lost every game up to that point, sacked Takagi and appointed Kim Jong-song as his replacement. Kim has picked up a single point from his five games in charge, and the team are now, as I mentioned a minute ago, rock bottom of J3. Clearly, from an outsider's perspective, it looks to me like there are two issues at Tottori. First is that the squad has ended up being weaker this year than last. In the closed season, they lost some important players. For instance, centre-back Rikito Inoue to Okayama, the central midfield player Naoto Misawa to Kyoto, and Daisuke Sakai, an attacking midfielder who went back to Oita at the end of his loan. And really none of the players Takagi brought in have worked out consistently, except maybe Junya Suzuki in the middle of the defence. Two of the players I think Takagi thought of as key signings picked up major injuries in pre-season, Yushi Nagashima from Gifu and Daichi Akiyama from Cerezo, both of whom have only started to become available since Takagi left. The other problem appears to me a huge loss of confidence among players the team need to be performing well. Masataka Kani, the captain, Kazuya Ando, Yuya Taguchi. Hikaru Arai seemed to be doing okay, but he's got a serious injury. Ando went off in the cup game against Cerezo and is out for the season. There doesn't seem to be anyone in the squad who is fit and who has the mental strength and positivity to pull everyone together, and you have to look to the coach to provide that. After all, Nagano can't have been feeling all that positive before the round 11 game at Tottori, but their coach somehow found that 8-1 win. Gainari looked absolutely bereft in that match, and there doesn't seem to be anything pulling them together, giving them heart. It looks like Kim has a very tough job on his hands. Thanks to Johnny and Tobias for their questions, and now to look briefly ahead to round 14 of the league season over the weekend of the 3rd and 4th of July. There are three games on Saturday. Among the promotion contenders, Toyama are at home to Iwate, knowing a win for either side will put them back on top. In the middle of the table, Kagoshima have a tough trip to Imabari. At the bottom, both sides are desperate for points as Tottori host Numazu. Then on Sunday, there are four fixtures to look forward to. The match of the round gives the most difficult challenge so far to resurgence Nagano. Looking for consecutive win number four, they're at home to none other than table-topping Gifu. Another fascinating encounter with implications for the higher placings is Miyazaki against Fukushima. Hachinohe and YSCC continue their battle for mid-table respectability. Hachinohe are at home to Fujieda, YSCC host Senuki. The team with a bye this week are Kumamoto. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.